The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
You know, sometimes Eric pretends to be interested in his guests.
But he's really just doing a crossword puzzle and rolling his eyes at what they say.
He told me never to say that, ever. But look, I made a mistake. Uh-oh.
I'm human.
In my way.
Only I'm not.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, newsflash. Todd Wilkerson scares me. He scares me. But that's okay. Folks, today is Tuesday, I think. Is it Tuesday? It is Tuesday. The paper says it's Tuesday. And I have the joy of speaking now, right now, with my friend, Big Bad John Zmirak. John Zmirak, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Are the Beagles there?
Yes, they are, but I'm hoping that they'll be relatively quiet.
Okay. Now, I just love to have you on anytime I can. We may even have a slot to talk to you more tomorrow. But right now, I just want to talk to you about some of the stuff you've been writing. Now, by the way, did you get Zmirak.com yet, or are you waiting for somebody to get it and sit on it and charge you a lot of money for it?
No, I'll do it. I had a website, badcatholics.com. But
John,
you're saying it's too clever?
Let me tell you something. We can help each other. Right now, I can help you. Badcatholics.com. If people are looking for John Zmirak, they need to be able to go to Zmirak.com and johnzmirak.com. You need to, when you get off the phone with me,
okay,
we'll do
promise.
Two segments. You need to do that. Otherwise,
right.
Somebody's going to listen to this program. They're going to jump on it, and you are going to pay them unto the last farthing, and you're
okay.
Going to be very sorry. I'm trying to help you, man.
I'm pretty confident they're going to spell it wrong, but okay. I will do it. Thank you.
Well, then get the alternative spellings. Seriously, because you write so much stuff. This is always the problem I have with you. You write so much great stuff. How do I find it? I got to go to the stream, and then people don't even know. Is it thestream.org or thestream.com, or is it the stream or stream? You need to have everything you write at johnzmirak.com and zmirak.com. All my listeners are going, yes, John,
okay,
do it. Do it,
all right,
please. You know you can advertise your book there for free.
Right.
John, what I'm trying to tell you is don't be a fool. Listen to me.
Okay.
Now that I've covered that, what article are we talking about today that you have written? How about embittered Catholic aristocrats on food stamps turn against America?
Yeah, that's a pretty attractive title there.
That's another attractive title. That's up there with Catch-22. It just – you can't forget it. Embittered Catholic aristocrats on food stamps turn against America. Can you please explain to me what you're talking about?
Sure. Ross Douthat at the New York Times has been touting some young Catholics who are questioning the value of the American founding and wondering whether this whole separation of church and state thing was such a good idea. And some of them actually... well, that sounds like a kind of an ultra-right-wing position. Some of them actually are economic socialists and want open borders and redistribution of wealth, which is an ultra-left-wing idea. And, Ross found that kind of exciting that people are willing to think these radical thoughts, and I think it's kind of alarming, and I wonder why.
I think it's alarming. And it reminds me of this is funny because this is a favorite subject of mine, but I never really get to talk about this. What are the limits of religious liberty?
Right.
In the United States of America, if somebody says, okay, I'm a Muslim, but I want to bring Sharia law to the United States, you realize right then we've just crossed the line with religious liberty. Because
you are now
melting church and state together into one. So that's when you have to say to the radical Muslim, yes, we want to be open to every different idea. But that idea destroys the very foundation of all liberty. And what you're talking about is there's this, you know, I would say fatal flaw in certain Catholic worldviews. It's exactly the same thing. It denigrates American self-government and freedom and wants to bring some kind of Catholic monarchy or something. Is that sort of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I wouldn't even call it monarchy. What they want is Catholic Sharia. I mean, that these people are actually replicating step by step the ways that young Muslims get radicalized. And I don't know why. I don't know exactly why they're doing it, but I do have a certain insight because I used to teach at a college where a lot of people were getting these ideas, and some of the faculty were giving them these ideas. And I don't want to name the place, but I got to see this firsthand over the course of 5 years, people developing these ideas and why these ideas were popular. And it's a little bit shocking, but let me try to unfold it for you. There are some very intensely Catholic colleges in America, and that have been trying to stay faithful to the church in every way, and that's mostly been a very good thing. But something strange has been happening at most of them. A lot of the students are becoming anti-American. And they're becoming like fans of Catholic Sharia, and I try to figure out why. And it struck me, there's a couple of things going on, and it ties in with why a lot of millennials are shifting to the left. At these colleges, they learn the liberal arts, okay, the liberal arts in the traditional sense, the Aristotelian sense. And one of the things in the liberal arts is it was aimed at aristocrats. It was aimed at people who would never have to work for a living. And a lot of the way that these people are taught the liberal arts is like they're supposed to be aristocrats, you know? They're not learning a trade, and they're not oriented towards working in the productive economy.
You know, it's amazing because you're saying this. You and I both went to Yale, and what you described just now was effectively my experience as an English major at Yale University in the 80s. Mm. In other words, there are many people that you're studying with who have family money, and they can afford to, you know, work for a little literary magazine or something. They're not really worried about making a living, and it's just not the kind of thing that is stressed. I've never thought of that. That's very interesting.
But okay, so take that. But instead of Yale, imagine colleges full of people from families of 5, 6, 7, 8 kids who are in heavy financial aid, who are in fact getting into debt, maybe getting into debt to the average of $37,000 a year. And then they graduate and they marry another, say, a girl or a man or woman from the same school, so now they are $75,000 in debt between them. They've been taught that the only work worthy of doing is something in the arts or education or working for the church. And they're taught it's virtuous to marry early and to have large families. So you need to live on one income. So you end up having, you know, earning $23,000 a year, owing $75,000 a year, having kids about 9 months apart. And guess what? You end up on welfare. And a lot of I've been noticed, especially among like Catholic bloggers and some columnists.
Well, this is inside baseball for most people listening to this program. So I guess my question is, what happens? In other words, why do you say that they turn against America?
Because America's not giving them the prestige and the salary and the influence that they've been taught to think that they deserve. And so they become economically dependent on the government, and they move to the left economically. So that they look down on America for not being purely Catholic. They look down on capitalism for not paying them the salary that they feel they deserve as intellectuals and artists. And as a result, they end up radical left wing, in one sense, on economics, but sort of Sharia types on religion. It's a staggering combination. But they actually started a group. They called themselves the Tradinistas, Traditionalist Sandinistas, and they were like Marxist Catholics who wanted Catholic Sharia in America. And
this is so bizarre because it ties in so many things. But as I was saying, for my audience, what fascinates me is how everything can go wrong. In other words, if you come to this country from another country and you're a Catholic and you really, really believe the whole country must be Catholic, you end up turning against, in America, you end up turning against American-style self-government. It's what everybody feared would happen when JFK was elected. He's going to be so Catholic he takes his his notes from the Pope, you know, and we're gonna lose America. When we come back, talking to John Zmirak, and after that, we're going to be talking about the great Tom Wolfe. We'll be right back.
How much do you spend on your pest control each year? $200, $300, or even $500 or more? What if I said you could spend less than $25 a year, even less with promo code SAVE20? Then listen up. G'day, I'm Scott from Plug-In Pest Free, and yes, it is possible to rid your home or business of unwanted pests for less than $25 per year. The answer is Plug-In Pest Free. Our bestseller, the Plug-In Pest Free Pro, will cover up to 4,000 square feet. Now that's fair dinkum. For just a one-time cost of only $249, even less with promo code SAVE20, you'll be pest-free for years to come. Log on to gopestfree.com today. Use promo code SAVE20 and start driving those pests away. Don't spray and regret. Plug in and forget. Gopestfree.com. That's gopestfree.com, promo code SAVE20.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/America. That's ZipRecruiter.com/America. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/America.
Hey, Albin.
What?
You just woke up. Yeah, I can't believe you're sleeping. You're not getting enough sleep at night. Probably it's your pillow.
Can I make
a suggestion?
Yeah.
My Pillow. Have you heard about My Pillow?
Oh,
we met the inventor, Mike Lindell. He's now become a friend because he's the warmest, craziest, wonderful entrepreneur. I mean, he's an American original. But he decided to do something, and I want my listeners, that's you, to listen. He said, for my listeners, My Pillow is right now offering 50% off the four-pack. 50% off the four-pack. It includes two premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows. Why not? If it's 50% off, why not get them for everybody you know? Call 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057. Use the promo code Eric or go to mypillow.com. Use the promo code Eric or you could use the promo code Metaxas. Either way, 50% off if you use Eric or Metaxas. Call 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057, mypillow.com.
The way you get your medicine prescriptions is now changing across America. GoGoMeds.com can deliver your medicine right to your door. Here's all you need to do. Your doctor gives you the prescription. You go online to GoGoMeds.com, put in your information, and make sure to include the promo code MIKE2018 to save $10 off your first prescription. Your meds are then delivered to your home, and you've saved money. It's that easy. No more waiting, no lines, no copay each month, and best of all, no wandering around the store aimlessly waiting for your prescription to be filled. GoGoMeds.com, the new way to get your medicine delivered right to your door. Remember that getting your prescription filled now means never having to go to a store again. GoGoMeds.com. GoGoMeds.com. Use the promo code MIKE2018 to save $10 off your first prescription. That's GoGoMeds.com, promo code MIKE2018.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Zmirak. JohnZmirak.com. JohnZmirak.com. Zmirak.com. John, I'm going to come to their Texas and I'm going to kill you and assume your identity if you do not get Zmirak. When you get off the line, we got 11 minutes in this segment. Zmirak.com and johnzmirak.com. Buy them. Otherwise, I'll instruct my minions to purchase it and squat on it and charge you unto the utmost farthing. Okay, now, John, we forgot you have a book that just came out today.
Yesterday.
What's going on? Yesterday.
Yep. It's the Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration.
An America First Manifesto.
Yep. I co-wrote it with Al Perotta, also of the stream. And basically, what we're trying to show is that immigration is not like the movement of the tectonic plates beneath our feet. That is some inevitable geological process that we have no power over.
We're not talking about like Mesoamericans or Neanderthals. We're talking about something that we can control.
It's actually the result of policy decisions.
Right, no, but I'm saying, but people talk about immigration kind of like, hey man, it's like all natural. Like people just flow where they want to flow. I don't believe in borders, man. And you're like, no, this thing happened called nation states, and we have separate economies and totally, totally, totally separate rules by which we govern ourselves freely because we're a free nation, and other people don't believe in those things, and so we have to have a little order. And by the way, in case you're scoring at home, it's entirely biblical. The idea
right.
that we just have to kind of open our borders to people, that's not biblical. We don't have time to unpack that right now. But, okay, you wrote a whole book on this, and it's out yesterday called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration by John Zmirak. A lot of John Zmirak fans are going to be very happy because they want to buy John Zmirak books. This is terrific. So tell us more about this great
book.
So
we're saying is that immigration is not like the movement of tectonic plates, a geological phenomenon. It is something we plan. It's something we decide on. It's a policy thing. It's the American tradition on immigration is all over the map. We do a history of immigration to America from the founding of the 13 colonies to the present. And America has had a wide variety of different policies depending on the reality on the ground in America. Do we need a lot of unskilled laborers like my grandfather, Patrice Zmirak, you know, who spoke only Croatian and could only shovel coal? Yeah, well, then we open the borders and do we take in those people? Do we not need lots of unskilled laborers who can't speak English and didn't go to high school? Well, then we lower the number of people who meet that description. Do we want to control our borders so people come here legally? Yes, that historically, all through the history of the country, we've had some control or tried to have some control over our borders. What's unprecedented now is that we've granted control of our southern border to drug cartels and narco traffickers and people smugglers. Right now, our southern border is the sovereign territory of MS-13. That is completely unacceptable. It's immoral. Thousands of immigrants get exploited. Thousands of female, 80% of female immigrants who enter America illegally are raped along the way. 80%.
What? 80%? Wait a minute.
That is from a mainstream liberal news source. I think I read it in the Huffington Post.
Okay, do me a favor. Repeat that again clearly. That is stunning.
80% of female illegal immigrants are raped on the journey.
What? Okay, you know, this, I guess, brings up the question. Ann Coulter, she doesn't always put this in the way that I would like, but she made a very important point that there's a culture, and MS-13 obviously is the worst part of that culture. But when you're talking about that level of rape, what in the world?
Women, women traveling on back roads at night with no protection of the police. That's the kind of thing that happens. It's tragic. That's what happens when you don't have the rule of law. When you allow armed gangs instead of, I don't know, the police to control your territory, that's what happens when you have lawlessness. And what we have on our southern border is absolute lawlessness. It is chaos. Ask people who live in Brownsville, Texas. Ask people who live, you know, along the border near San Diego. It's insanity. It's not anything to do with the rule of law or the protection of the innocent or the enforcement of the democratic will of the majority of Americans who overwhelmingly want to reduce unskilled immigration, legal or and wipe out illegal immigration, to stop it completely. So we do need to build – and you know how the people showed their will? They elected Donald Trump. how are the elites that want cheap labor and cheap votes for Democrats expressing their will? They're trying to topple President Trump by whatever means they can, crooked or foul, behind the scenes. They're trying to overturn the Democratic results of the election, just the way in Britain the elites are trying to overturn the Brexit, the leaving of the European Union. The elites in America profit financially from mass immigration. George Borjas, a Harvard economist, son of Cuban immigrants, has proved it in economic terms. Immigration adds very little to the U.S. economy, but what it does do is redistribute wealth from blue-collar workers and people who didn't finish high school or didn't finish college. It redistributes wealth from them to the stockholders of the Fortune 500 companies that benefit from cheap labor.
This is... It's depressing, but it's sobering, and ultimately we need to know this so that we can figure out a way through it and understand it. I really, honestly, John, I'm always glad to hear if you've written a book, because this is, but particularly on this subject of immigration, the level of vitriol in the cultural conversation right now, it's very sad, basically, that we can't even try to – we can't even define our terms, you know, and it's cliche versus cliche versus cliche. So to really try to understand this, anyway, you've written a book on the subject. It's called
right,
The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration.
Right. And what I'm trying to show is that from any rational, moral, religious point of view, we have to have control over our borders. Starting point. Okay, so we clearly have to build a wall. We have to enforce our immigration laws through simple measures like E-Verify. It is an electronic system using that magic that called the internet that allows every employer to check and see if the worker he's trying to hire is legal to be.
Okay, I have a question. Who in the world would oppose that? Who is
opposed? The state of California. It is illegal for cities in California to use E-Verify because the state of California will not allow them to do so.
I don't see this changing unless it's federally mandated. Can this be federally mandated?
Absolutely. Absolutely can be federally mandated because workers are supposed to pay Social Security tax and federal tax.
Well, it's not just that. It's kind of like saying, you know, we just want to know what is – I mean, it's kind of weird because it's California has not been a bastion of freedom, and yet in this case they're acting like, oh, we don't want, you know, we don't want our people to register guns, we don't want our people to register cars, we want them to be free, you know, like the government. It's almost like they're coming against big government, ironically, to support a larger idea of big government.
It's just total hypocrisy. It's like the hippie who doesn't believe in private property until you try to take some of his hash.
That is very good. Well, anyway, but the E-Verify thing, whenever I heard that, I thought, hey, what a great idea. You know, it's pretty basic. And I think that it's fascinating that that would solve a lot of problems. And it's fascinating to me that there are people in America who are against it. It's just bizarre. Surely it's not just California that's against it.
No. I mean, anywhere there are sanctuary cities, they tend to be against it. I mean, it should be mandatory. It's voluntary. Can you imagine if we were to say that the information, like gun registries, you know, to buy like an automatic weapon, fully automatic weapon, it should be voluntary whether or not the gun store does a background check on you. So the left would be out of their minds. They would be bleeding out of every orifice of their body. They'd be so upset. But when it comes to actually being in the country and working, or and maybe committing identity theft by using a Social Security number stolen from somebody and messing up their taxes and messing up their retirement, no, they don't want to enforce that law. It's complete madness. The people who are for big government and the nanny state in every other way, when it comes to determining whether anybody even has the right to be here and be working here, no, that one thing we're going to make an exception. You know, anybody born here who actually has papers, yeah, we're gonna check their guns. We're going to come inspect their home school. You know, we're going to make sure they're giving their kids enough niacin, or we're going to take away custody. But you know what? Anybody can come and live here who wants to, and you don't even have to register.
It is fascinating, and I'm grateful for your voice in the conversation. I'm really glad you wrote this book. I hope people who are your fans who listen to this program will get a copy of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration by John Zmirek and Al Parada. Right on the cover, there's a quote from Ronald Reagan: "A nation that cannot control its borders is not a nation." That's Ronald Reagan. Folks, we'll be right back. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about Tom Wolfe. And tomorrow, John Zmirek, we're going to have you back on this program, but not till tomorrow. Folks, you got to wait till tomorrow. I'm sorry.
Let's talk about your business for a minute. Think about all the things you're doing to attract the best talent. Between the networking events and referral bonuses, you're probably spending plenty of time and money to find the right people. But what if it was your office that attracted employees? Today's workforce is mobile and active, and they want an office designed around the way they work. And Varidesk makes it easy. Varidesk standing desk solutions help you create an active workspace where employees can stand and move, so they're happier, healthier, and more productive. Our full line of active office products are constructed with commercial-grade materials and require little to no assembly, so they're easy to set up and move. Companies of any size can have a Varidesk active workspace. Ordering is simple. Shipping is free. And our 30-day guarantee means if you don't love it, we'll pick it up for free. Learn more about Varidesk Active Workspace Solutions at varidesk.com/radio. That's varidesk.com/radio.
Your cell phone's connected to your tablet. Your tablet's connected to your laptop. Your laptop's connected to your Wi-Fi. 1 week link and thieves are in.
The digital world is so connected these days, it just takes 1 week link for criminals to get in. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection now adds the power of Norton Security to help protect against the threats of today's connected world.
Your desktop's connected to your smart TV. Your smart TV's connected to your smartwatch.
Threats to your identity, like your info for sale on the dark web. And online threats to your devices, like ransomware. No one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices. And if there's a problem, our agents will work to fix it.
Your smartwatch is connected to your video doorbell. Your video doorbell's connected to your smart lock.
Join now and for the first year, get an additional 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 per month plus applicable taxes. Go to LifeLock.com and enter promo code SMART. New LifeLock with Norton. More detection, more protection.
Sure you know the Savior? Are you persuaded
to go home?
That you're ready for the Lord to come and take you home?
There's a good question. I hope that I hope you can say you are ready. If you're not ready, keep listening to this program. You need to be ready. Folks, we're going to have more Marion Ross tomorrow and more John Zmirek tomorrow, but today I want to talk to my friend Terry Mattingly, a journalism professor at the King's College, because we need to talk about the great journalist Tom Wolfe, who has just passed into the great beyond. Terry Mattingly, are you there?
I am glad to be here, sir.
Thank you so much for offering yourself to talk about this, because I, you know, I read your article at getreligion.org, and I thought it would just be great to talk to you. I had the privilege of meeting Tom Wolfe a number of times, but you are a journalist, and he was a journalist, and I would just love to get your take on who he was and his legacy.
It's almost impossible to overstate how important his journalism was in helping define the 60s. I mean, so much of the language of that time was linked to the journalism about it. I mean, and if you, when we talk about the 60s, we're really talking about like 1967 to about 1973 or 4. I mean, the 60s weren't all in the 60s. I mean, the events we think of as the 60s kind of overlap. And Wolfe is in the middle of all that. He has a very interesting history. I don't know. I've seen photos of you with him, and I've seen your introduction to him at the Darwin's Doubt event, which we can come back to.
Yeah.
Because I think that was certainly interesting. I'd be intrigued to know if you had any exchanges with him at that point.
Sure.
But I think people forget that this was a man who did a doctorate at Yale, of all places. I think you know a little bit about Yale. And then made the unusual choice after doing a doctorate in American studies. And American studies is kind of a catch-all phrase that gets attached to someone who wants to study just about everything you can get your hands on about America.
Yeah, I want to study the Brady Bunch.
Well, I mean, there are pop culture elements to this, I'm sure, but we're talking someone who would have studied literature.
Well, I was going to say the difference between Tom Wolfe doing American studies is that he wouldn't have written a thesis on the Brady Bunch. He would have actually taken it seriously. I mean, he was a genius and a polymath, a very, very wide thinker. I mean, he's famous today for The Right Stuff, for Bonfire of the Vanities, but he was really more famous in the 60s as the really founder of this idea of the new journalism. So why don't you explain that, since you're a journalist?
Yeah. Before we get to new journalism, I think it's helpful to know where it comes from. He was obsessed in his doctoral work at Yale with an academic topic called status theory, and where there are a lot of people who, you know, they don't think that America has levels of society and doesn't have class structure. Tom Wolfe never bought that. And from the beginning, he was very interested in American elites and their power and how they express themselves. So he makes the unusual decision of after getting a doctorate from Yale in American studies, he applies for ordinary entry-level jobs as a newspaper reporter.
Yeah.
Not your normal career move.
No.
And then works his way up to where 1962 he arrives in New York City. And at that point, you know, just becomes a part of this explosion of writing in New York City. I guess he's best known for his work at New York Magazine, which
right.
was the kind of the journalism zip code that he used to launch the new journalism as one of the key writers in it.
But now, that's before New York Magazine became kind of trashy.
Well, okay. At that point,
it was a respected magazine in the 60s.
Yeah, when you're looking in the early 70s, and you're writing primarily for New York Magazine and Esquire, and New Yorker didn't really like him a whole lot for reasons that should become apparent later.
Yeah.
But Wolf is in very prestigious company there, and he's writing a kind of fusion of sociology with colorful journalism. And the thing I want to stress about his definition of new journalism, that he wants to write reported, hard, factual material, but he's showing the world through his eyes. So he considered this to be like a combination of fiction in terms of the structure. He wanted conversations and anecdotes, and he wanted to just like land you in the middle of something and go 360 and let you look at it. But at the same time, he's not someone, to my knowledge, who was ever accused of like creating fake characters or stretching the limits of journalism when it comes to fact. He was very much a notepad and a pen. I'm here talking to people. And ironically, the white suit, if you listen to some of the things he talked about, the suit that he adopted in the 60s, the white suit to him was a symbol of being a kind of observer who walks in and you can't ignore that he's there.
That is amazing. We're going to be right back talking to my friend Terry Mattingly of the King's College about Tom Wolfe. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Then I know that you will plainly see. Biggest fool that's ever hit the...
Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
Have I told you about Relief Factor recently?
Please do.
May I? Because
yes.
I take Relief Factor every day. If you've got aches and pains and you don't want to – first of all, I think a lot of people have this attitude like, well, that's just life. I've got to deal with it, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't agree with that. I think you should try what you can, okay? Relief Factor is one of those things that the reason I recommend it to all my friends is that it's non-toxic. It's not like taking Advil or some weird medicine or something. You can take it all day long. This is nothing dangerous. But it works for a lot of people where nothing else has worked. So that's why I say go to relieffactor.com, get the quick start pack for $19.95. You'll know in less than 3 weeks when you take – I would take two or three packets a day for that time and see how you feel. If you feel improvement, you stick with it. Anyway, look, Jim from Texas writes, he says, I was skeptical, but my wife talked me into trying it. After 2 months of taking Relief Factor, I hardly notice any pain. I'm so glad I found it. Relief Factor works. ReliefFactor.com. One thing we expect in politicians is honesty, and Nancy Pelosi is very honest when it comes to taxes. She was asked by a reporter if her plan was to raise taxes should Democrats take back the House this fall. Her answer, that is accurate. Since the tax cut law passed in December, millions of Americans have seen real money in their pockets, either through bonuses and raises or less money being taken out of their paychecks. And the Democrats are determined to reverse that course. They're ignoring stories of business owners like Joe, owner of Joseph's Light Cookies, who was able to give his employees raises of thousands of dollars, in his words, because of tax cuts. Or Carlos Ruiz, owner of HD Metals in Arizona, who is hiring more and investing in the business to make it grow, all because of this tax cut law. These stories are all across America, from business owners to employees who are seeing more in their paychecks. The tax cut law is working, and you should let Congress know. Go to taxcutswork.com and email a letter to your congressman telling them to keep their hands off your tax cuts. It's your money. Go to taxcutswork.com now. Email a letter. That's taxcutswork.com.
Are you a timeshare owner that would like to get out of your timeshare the right way? Hi, I'm Karen, owner of Lone Star Transfer. Getting out of your timeshare is probably at the top of your to-do list for 2018. Now is the time to make the call to simplify your life. We have an excellent track record and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. So if you want to get rid of those high maintenance fees and annual bills for vacations you never take, call 844-284-4863 or visit us online at LoneStarTransfer.com. That's 844-284-4863. For over a decade, we have been working in timeshare owner advocacy to help those stuck in timeshares. Let us help you with a legal and ethical solution. Call us today for a private, no-obligation consultation. We will give you a solution that will get you out of your timeshare once and for all. Call 844-284-4863 or LoneStarTransfer.com. Satisfaction guaranteed.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
It's probably been about 10 years ago. I had quite a few credit cards. The interest on the cards was really high. I was making the minimum payments, but barely. And it was just getting to be too much, so I called Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976 to talk to a certified counselor.
They met with me, and they were able to get all of my credit cards in one lower payment.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
They did help me learn how to manage my money. Now, you know, we have a house, and we're doing a lot better.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
My name is Holly, and I am debt-free for keeps.
1-800-990-6976.
Like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me.
Hey folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. That's the Beatles. I'm Eric Metaxas, and I'm talking to Terry Mattingly about the great journalist and writer Tom Wolfe, who just passed away a few days ago, and whom I had the privilege of meeting a number of times. Terry Mattingly, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Well, yeah, Tom Wolfe is hard to sum up because he really is like the proverbial comet in the sky. I mean, there's so much to him. First, there's the first part of his career where he kind of redefines journalism. And it's interesting because we think about the 60s and how, you know, all the rules were broken and everything changed. Rarely do I think good came of it. But in the case of Tom Wolfe and what he did to journalism, that was a good thing. That was a good outcome.
Well, I wanted to go back to your raising the topic new journalism, because I think it's important that from his perspective as an academic, what Wolf saw himself doing in a way was a form of old journalism. He was kind of restoring that personal viewpoint that you would have seen with Dickens. And he thought that very explicitly. He was asked once to define the term new journalism. And I can read you the quote here. He said that meant writing nonfiction from newspaper stories to books, using basic reporting to gather the material, but techniques ordinarily associated with fiction, such as scene-by-scene construction, to narrate the story. And he said he wanted to do this so he could combine his love of reporting with his American studies concepts, especially status theory. So what eventually begins to make people mad at Wolf is he starts observing closely and reporting what he's seeing about parts of New York life and high culture life that people kind of wanted him to leave alone.
Right. He sees the hypocrisy in the cultural elites of New York in the 60s. I mean, when you think of Leonard Bernstein having this
part.
Well, tell us about that. That is the classic. Tell us about that.
Well, that's basically where you take this man with his head full of academic material about status and class and a wicked sense of humor, and you drop him into a cocktail party in the luxury apartment of Leonard Bernstein. He's surrounded by the Black Panthers. He's there to raise money for the Black Panthers. And all of a sudden, you've got Wolf commenting on the hors d'oeuvres and the irony of these things being handed out by servants, you know, in aprons and maid uniforms. And people just weren't amused. He was noted.
Well, wait. When you say people weren't amused, you mean that the cultural elites, the people at the New Yorker or the New York Times or Pauline Kael and all of the people in upper-class New York society, which tended to be very liberal and it still is today, those people did not like a brilliant, witty journalist like Tom Wolf telling on them and telling and pointing out the rank hypocrisy of their world.
Well, he's rebelling against his class.
Right.
With a little bit more irony, people also forget that this is a man from the South. So to some degree, he was used to hearing the Southern culture critiqued for a lot of subjects and hypocrisies, and he would have thought all that was valid. But he's wanting to know, why does New York get away with this? There was a quote that from an interview with Rolling Stone with him that I think perfectly sums it all up. Let's see if I can find that exact quote. Yeah, he said he wanted to write with exactly the same reverence that the people who screamed the most would have written about life in a small American town or in the business world or in professional sports, which is to say with no reverence at all, which is as it should be. And these days, if you mock the prevailing fashion in the world of the arts or journalism, you're called a conservative,
right?
Which is just another term for a heretic.
Well, that's exactly what we're seeing with Donald Trump today. I mean, it's been the narrative, you know, since the 60s, that there are certain people who say, we set the style, we set the standard, and you can't go against us. And if you do, you're a Neanderthal, you're a conservative, you're a bigot, whatever it is. Tom Wolf was willing and able to go against that. I mean, that article, I can't remember the title. What's the article? Mao Maoing with the
I'd have to look that one.
Okay.
Up.
Well, anyway, but the point is, the Leonard Bernstein's one. That's classic. But he also did it. He did it many times. But the one version that I somehow bumped up against, he wrote a book, one of the greatest books I've ever read, called The Painted Word.
Yeah.
And The Painted Word, he takes down modern art like absolutely, it's like dropping a daisy cutter, you know, on an elephant. Just obliterates any memory of what stood as modern art. He blows it up so badly that I thought there is nothing more to be said on the subject. If you are open-minded and you read The Painted Word, which is a small book, it totally changes your view of modern art, because we're all told, oh, we're supposed to respect modern art, even though it gets increasingly weird and ugly and really ugly and offensive and political. We're all told, like, no, you're stupid. You need to bow down before. This is art. This is the new art. And Tom Wolfe in the book The Painted Word just blows it up so brilliantly that it's amazing to me that MoMA or the Guggenheim are still standing.
Yeah, that's in some ways the final betrayal that they're willing to talk about. Although some people forget another. Did you ever read the book I Am Charlotte Simmons?
No.
Now, what's fascinating about Charlotte Simmons, this is the book that really put him back on the map from my perspective. In Charlotte Simmons, he takes on the hookup culture on a college campus. Most people think he was writing about Duke because of this combination of academia with basketball. But in the midst of this, he takes this brilliant, young, innocent Christian and puts her in the context of Duke, and just completely, she gets run over by a truck.
Not literally.
No.
No, but yeah, he's talking about the sexualized culture of modern campuses. And again, that's the kind of thing we don't write about that. We approve of that. We're going to go to a break. We're going to be right back. A few more minutes with Terry Mattingly about Tom Wolfe.
This Memorial Day, Patriot Mobile honors the soldiers who have given their lives while serving in the American Armed Forces. Memorial Day is a solemn day of remembrance for the heroes who gave everything for our country and to protect our rights and freedoms. Patriot Mobile was founded to support conservative organizations by contributing a portion of each of their members' bills to causes that represent what we believe in, American values. Patriot Mobile offers great discounts to our military, veterans, and first responders every day to show that they appreciate and value their sacrifice. Switching to Patriot Mobile is easy. You can keep your phone number. Just bring over your compatible phone. They even reimburse your installment and switching fees as a bill credit. $500 per line and up to $1,500 per account. Call today to make the switch at 1-800-A-PATRIOT or go to patriotmobile.com. Make conservative change happen every time you use your cell phone at 1-800-A-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
It's probably been about 10 years ago. I had quite a few credit cards. The interest on the cards was really high. I was making the minimum payments, but barely. And it was just getting to be too much, so I called Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976 to talk to a certified counselor.
They met with me, and they were able to get all of my credit cards in one lower payment.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
They did help me learn how to manage my money. Now, you know, we have a house, and we're doing a lot better.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
My name is Holly, and I am debt-free for keeps.
1-800-990-6976.
Hey folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to Terry Mattingly, professor of journalism at the King's College here in New York City, and we're talking about Tom Wolfe, who was an American icon and a New York icon, passed away a few days ago. Terry, by the way, I want to point people to getreligion.org if they want to read more about this. You've written about it at getreligion.org. So what else can we say? We've got about four minutes left at the most.
Well, the three levels of his rebellion get us to your meeting him there in 2013. First, he rebels against the arts culture and the high culture. Then in Charlotte Simmons, he rebels against kind of this ugly, ugly form of the sexual revolution and puts out a book of essays called Hooking Up, in which he takes that on. And then finally he gets to the rebellion that in the obituaries I noticed they wouldn't even talk about, which is brings him to that lecture
right
in 2013. Listen to this for a second. I was amazed in the profile of Wolf that ran in New York Magazine. I mean, in the hallowed ground in which it was hallowed at that time that he wrote so much in. The profile said, Wolf spent most of the remainder of his life as a novelist with only occasional bites of pure journalistic writing. His final book, Back to Blood, was published in 2012, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What?
That's,
you know what? I read that you wrote that, but it didn't really hit me the way it just hit me now. He just published a book that came out about a year ago, year and a half ago. And they don't even mention it in New York Magazine.
And they haven't corrected. I just went to the website. I've been checking it every couple of days to see when they would correct this error.
Well, look, New York Magazine, just in case anybody cares, not to be confused with the New Yorker, they are both deeply troubled, lockstep, hyper-liberal magazines. But New York Magazine, to my mind, has become really trashy with the occasional good article. But
so their profile of one of their most famous writers
incorrectly
states that his last book was in 2012.
Okay, but why? And because his last book was about how Darwinian evolution is nonsense. For somebody like him to say that, you know why they ignored it? I'll tell you why. Because, number one, they can't abide that thought. And because they have enough respect for Tom Wolfe to say, oh, he got old and crazy. We just won't bring it up.
That's – well, but without saying that. And the book is also not mentioned in the New York Times piece. Now, CBS did an excellent piece about that book at the time it came out in an interview with him as this kind of him owning up to this being like as big a rebellion as you can take. So cheers to CBS for doing that. But it really irks me that in a profile, an obituary tribute to one of the most famous writers, if not the most famous writer, to ever grace their pages, they miss such a basic fact about his life.
It's stunning, but it's typical. I mean, the thing is, we don't have time to get into it now. We're out of time. But just to sum up here, he came to a Socrates in the City event. I just about fainted when I saw that the great Tom Wolfe had walked into the room. I interviewed Stephen Meyer, one of the proponents of intelligent design, brilliant scientist. And Tom Wolfe, I found out from Stephen Meyer, was writing a book on the problems with evolution. So he sat there. Of course, there was no way for me to ignore him. So I pointed him out in the crowd and I raved about it. Anybody can go to SocratesInTheCity.com and you can watch the introduction. Once I get people settled into their seats, I get into it with Tom Wolfe. But it's an amazing thing. Go to SocratesInTheCity.com and check it out. Go to Get Religion and getreligion.com and check out Terry's writing. Terry, my friend, thank you for being on the program.
Very glad to be here and for allowing us to get into this topic about a very important man.
Yeah, we need to do more of that. Folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. MetaxasTalk.com is the website. Thanks for listening.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.